Love music. Live sport. Let's hear it for the girls with Maury McGonigal and special guests on Rock Sport Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Tuesday night at Rock Sport Radio, and this is Let's Hear It for the Girls. Tonight, my guest in the studio is Elena Soper from YWCA Scotland, but more commonly known as...
The Young Women's Movement.
Thank you, Elena. So we'll try and say the Young Women's Movement all through the programme. So welcome to Let's Hear It to the Girls, for the girls. I'm really looking forward to our chat and discussing the recent report from the Young Women's Movement regarding young women lead in sport. Fascinating report.
Yes, really interesting and a culmination of a lot of hard work.
And you've got tons to say about it. But however, at this point, as normal in the proceedings, we kind of take a little look back at what's been happening in the world of women in sport this week. And of course, we're coming to the close season for a lot of sports, so I'm digging hard to find these things. So please, if you've got any results, any events, any news at all, send it to me, because I'd love to mention it on the Tuesday night programme. But let's start off with rowing. And Dundee University Boat Club made history as Henley Women's Regatta finalists. Despite giving it all they had left in a hard-fought race against Tideway Scullers, the girls narrowly lost out on taking home the Frank V. Harry Cup. But it was a phenomenal performance, given that their training consisted of rowing out of a shed on a river that's unrowable for around 100 days per year. So making the final of the Henley Regatta is pretty mind-blowing. So what do you think of that?
I think that's amazing. You certainly wouldn't get me on a river, coming out of a shed on a river to row in Dundee.
Well, that's it. I mean, it's just all the stories behind the success that I think are really, really interesting. And I remember at one point, before perhaps Catherine Granger, and I'm not sure what suffix she's got, prefix she's got to her name at the moment, is she a dame?
Is she a date? I'm not 100% sure.
We might have just elevated
her. We might make a recommendation from Rock Sport.
Let's just
Dame
call
Granger.
Her, let's just call her Catherine. But I remember one of the first STEM chats she gave us, listening to her, and you know, she's quite funny because she was in university and she was going about in freshers looking at the different sports. And the reason she said at that point, and I don't know if she says it anymore, is she loved the rowing because it's, look, come and join us. Here, have a glass of wine. Let's chat about it. And she thought, that must be quite sociable. So, you know, history was made there. And history's been made again at Dundee. So well done to all the girls at Dundee. Kind of on the same thread, only the only thread being still in waters, canoe slalom. Ellie Gibson, and I believe her mother was actually one of... award winners of Scottish Women in Sport at one point, but Ellie Gibson herself participated in the Women's C1 final at the ICF Canoe Slalom World Cup 2 in Slovakia last weekend. And in her own words, she was super chuffed to make the final at my first World Cup coming back from injury. She then went on to say, some great paddling, but some costly mistakes left me in the final coming in at 6. And Sophie Ogilvie came in 9th in the same race. So yeah, I think it's good that, you know, people can be honest, they can speak out, and understanding she's made mistakes is a great way then to rectify it for the next time. So again, well done to Ellie. Athletics, and of course it's our favourite with Let's Hear It for the Girls, it's Gemma Rike, and she just held off Elliot Baker at the weekend to win the under 23 800 metres title in 2:06.41, another brilliant race. So she was again saying on Twitter, that's about as close as it gets. Ellie Baker did try to get closer to the tiring Gemma Rike in the under-23 final, but she just couldn't quite catch the Scot, who won by the smallest of margins to take gold in 2:06.43. And I have to say at this point, I was really delighted and quite honoured to be a guest of Action for Children on Friday night when they had Dame Catherine Granger. Oh, sorry. Dame Kelly Holmes. Sorry, I've got my dames mixed up. You know, you can never know too many dames. Sorry, they had Dame Kelly Holmes speak at their dinner. And it was fascinating to listen to her and what she's done and how she overcame quite a lot of issues in her own personal life as a young person moving into an adult, and talking about the resilience and always wanting to do better. I thought it was fabulous. And what I really did like about it, Elena, was the fact that, to my recollection, and I've been about for quite a long while and I've been fortunate to be invited to quite a few dinners, it's the first time we've had a sportswoman.
Yes, definitely. And similarly, I have also been to a few sports dinners, and it's almost like having a woman, it's a bit of a surprise. You're like, oh, there's a successful woman in sport. Excellent. Roll them out.
It was fascinating because, you know, there was a mixed audience, still predominantly men, but the men were queuing up to speak to her, to get their photographs taken, to get selfies taken with her, to buy her book, which was signed. And to Dame Kelly's credit, she stayed the whole night. In fact, she was there on the dance floor at the end of the night dancing to Loch Lomond.
And that's why she's a dame.
But, you know, I don't think there's many men would do that. You know, they just see it as another sort of part of their working life and they're off as soon as they can get it. And it was lovely to see that. So, yeah, thanks for Action and Children, who raised £80,000 in the night.
That's amazing.
An amazing organisation and more, you know, power to their elbow. We're going on to cricket, one of my favourite sports, because of the people who work there who are so passionate. And so the Wildcats Scotland national cricket team have arrived in La Manga. Doesn't that sound great? For the ICC Women's Qualifier Europe 2019. So this tournament provides two chances to progress to the global stage, with Netherlands and Germany fighting for the remaining spot at the ICC Women's T20 World Cup Qualifier in Dundee and Angus, beginning in August 2019. And because Scotland are hosting it, they're already qualifying for this tournament, so that's great. But in addition, the team that finishes top in the ICC Women's Qualifier in 2019 will progress to the Women's Cricket World Cup Qualifier in late 2020, which is the final stage before the Women's Cricket... Well, I'm exhausted even saying this. Before the Women's Cricket World Cup 2021 in New Zealand. So really, the bottom line is for Scotland to qualify for the next stage of the ICC Women's Cricket World Cup, they need to finish top of the table. So I'd like to say good luck. Hope you can do it.
Good luck. And also maybe another acronym, the ICCWCWC 2021, just rolls off the tongue.
Nothing rolls off my tongue. As you will hear as we go through this hour, nothing rolls off. I get a bit tongue twisted, you know, it's great for radio. Great. Also, I'd like to say congrats to Nicola Wilson, who's previously been the Women and Girls Participation Manager, because she's now been appointed as Head of Participation at Cricket Scotland. And Nicola herself, who has been on the programme Fabulous Women, she was selected following a very competitive recruitment process involving over 50 candidates from 7 different nations. So I think that says a lot for the calibre of person they've got in the job. Nick herself is a qualified coach in both hockey and cricket and played 65 ODIs for New Zealand and the Netherlands and was part of the New Zealand World Cup winning squad in 2000. I think she's qualified.
Definitely qualified. Definitely deserved. Good luck as well for that.
I think she'll do. So we can never have a programme without talking about football, although the World Cup has, for Scotland, sadly passed us by now. But in case you are missing your football fix, you can support the women's under-19 team as Scotland hosts the UEFA Under-19s Women's Championships in July this year. Scotland will play host to the tournament for the first time, and it's between the 16th and 28th of July. And if my reckoning's not too far away, that's just over 2.5 weeks because we've got the 1st of July in Monday. Yep. So the matches will take place at Firhill Stadium in Glasgow, Forth Bank in Stirling, St Mirren Park in Paisley and McDermott Park in Perth. Scotland themselves will meet France on day one at St Mirren Park with a 7:30pm kick-off. So if you want more information on this, you want to have a look at what the fixtures are, you'll get them all on the Scottish FA website. And as well as that, this is interesting, the Scottish FA have just announced that B. Charlotte's song Dreamers is the official track for the 18th UEFA Women's Under-19 Championship. Now, do you know B. Charlotte?
I actually do know B. Charlotte. I saw B. Charlotte play at Summer Hall during last summer, and I thought they were just amazing. And this is a really big deal for them, and I'm really glad that they're getting this recognition.
Oh, wow, because I did read that she's now out in Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
But I do remember following her on Twitter a while ago because she was pretty vocal in terms of women and girls and equality. And I
thought,
great young woman.
Also, unbelievable fashion sense.
Oh, wow. Let's have a wee look at that.
I'm a big fan. Very bright, very shiny. I'm a big fan.
Wow. Oh, well, that's fabulous. So, yeah, I haven't heard the track yet. Do you know Dreamers? Is that a new
one? I think it is a new one. I'm not sure. I don't think I've heard it yet, but okay. I'm sure it'll be really good.
Well, seemingly, and you and I were both there. You know, supporters first heard the track when B. Charlotte performed pre-match to the gathered supporters at the recent Scottish Women's National Team World Cup warm-up match against Jamaica on the 20th of May at Hampden. But I have to say that probably we weren't at all aware of what the significance was at that time.
No, and I actually missed their warm-up set because I was there with 10 other young women, and getting us all together at the right time to get in that early proved somewhat difficult with the traffic getting to Hampden. So I unfortunately missed their set before that. But
I think a lot of people underestimated the numbers that were going to be there in that night. I mean, there's about 18,500, and I don't think anyone, well, I did hope we'd get 10, 12. 18,500 was fabulous, but I think there were, you know, issues with queues outside the doors, etc. Did you have okay access getting in?
Once we got to the queue, that we didn't have an issue at all. I mean, the issue really that everyone had was getting to Hampden. I think people, like you say, completely underestimated just how busy the roads would be, and perhaps had it been a men's football match, people would have given that additional time, but just didn't anticipate kind of the numbers that would have that effect on getting to Hampden for a women's game. So it's bad of us to not think that it would be busy and not get there on time, but also really good that there was that kind of huge support that showed up for the game.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, the women's team came home just last week. I've got all my days mixed up. So they returned home from France, and I was always fascinated because watching the Argentina game, Erin Cuthbert, when she scored the goal, she picked up a little photograph, and I was watching it at home in telly. Unfortunately, didn't get to Paris. And I could hear the commentator saying, oh, there's a picture. I wonder if it's a sort of homage maybe to someone, maybe to her gran or someone, whatever. It was actually a picture of Erin herself. So this was quite a mystery. Why would a young player hold up a picture of herself? Because she's there.
Yes.
Yeah, we resolved that mystery because Erin, who does a blog on a regular basis, I think, for BBC, told us why. She said that it was her dad who gave her the picture just before she went off to the World Cup. And he said, and this is quite emotional, so you know, hear it.
I know.
He came out and gave me this wee picture, maybe about the size of a bank card, of me when I was a kid outside Ibrox with a Rangers trackie on. And then she said, he said to me, I know how much you say you do it for us, but you have to do it for yourself. And he'd written on the back of this picture, do it for the wee girl who had a dream and practiced until it came true. Wow.
That's just amazing.
Isn't it?
It's quite emotional.
It is quite emotional. And, you know, I think that's the one thing that we get from Erin and all the other players then. It is practice, practice, practice. I remember years ago when I worked in women's football, you know, called it training all the time. Mm-hmm. And I felt, you know, to try and encourage young women in, we have to look at our wording and training.
Yes.
Sounds like hard work and somebody's going to be training you. But practice is something you can do yourself. And I think,
exactly.
And I think that's what Erin was getting at. She practiced every hour of the day, but it was fun. She enjoyed it.
Exactly.
She wasn't made to do it. And I think that kind of leads us on later to our conversation about your new report.
Yes, yes.
Which I have to say, I'm really looking forward to. I think it's a fascinating report and got some great recommendations. Mm-hmm. But as we are at the moment, that's this week's roundup finished. So let me say thank you very much. And we shall take a short break, and hopefully you'll stay with us and come back for the second half. And as I said to you before, please get on our social media. Please let me know if you've got a result, you've got an event, or if you want to come and be like Elena, sit in the hot seat and have a chat. We've got everyone telling you it's not a difficult thing to do. We're quite kind to our guests. So stay with us as we'll be back after this short break. Thank you.
Love music. Live sport. Let's hear it for the girls with Maureen McGonigal and special guests on Rock Sport Radio.
Welcome back, folks, to Rock Sport Radio and to Let's Hear It for the Girls, and of course to our special guest tonight, Elena Soper from Young Women's Movement, which, you know, people probably know as the YWCA. And again, just before we get into our chat, I know you're just coming back, you've had your cup of tea and you're nice and settled, but please, Let me remind you that we would love to hear from you. So we're on Twitter at RockSportDAB or we're on Facebook through RockSport Radio. Just mention Let's Hear It for the Girls. We'll pick this out and we'll get in touch with you. So now to our guest.
Hello.
Hello. So we're going to start off with going back to school because, Eleanor, you're kind of unusual in terms of our guests have always participated in sport, but you're a wee bit like me. You know, you're an armchair fan.
Yes. And,
but it's fascinating. So you grew up in Edinburgh and you went to St. James. No, just James.
No saint. Definitely.
No saint.
I believe he was a tobacco merchant, so definitely
right.
not
no
a saint.
Saint. So it was James Gillespie's high school.
Yes.
Before you moved to Glasgow. So tell me about your time in school. Can you remember back to PE? Did you like it at that point?
I remember in my first couple of years at high school, I played for the school football team and I enjoyed certain sports at PE. So I enjoyed playing basketball. I was quite a fan of badminton. And I kind of did that extracurricular bit as well. You know, I would go and play football at the weekends. I'd play in games after school. And then when I got to about 13, 14, my interest just kind of disappeared. And kind of from that point, I went on and I was still being physically active. I started doing dance at school. And so I did that. I guess as a sport, I did dance, kind of contemporary dance, a little bit of salsa dancing. I was even a cheerleader at one point. And then when I left school, I essentially just stopped completely.
But it sounded as if you had great opportunities and a lot of choice at school, because sometimes we think the barriers are that, you know, girls are pigeonholed into one or two sports while the boys go predominantly to play football. So the experience was good. You had these opportunities.
Yes. Yeah, so I think all through school there was a girls' football team. I can't remember that there were any other kind of groups that went out and played, you know, at the weekends. Certainly not basketball or rugby or anything like that. In terms of the dance, it was more kind of an after-school club, and we did one big show a year, and that was kind of the aim for the whole year was preparing a dance for this big show. And it was only in my final year of high school that they brought in a cheerleading coach, and it was someone from one of the cheerleaders that does things at the rugby. I can't remember what the name of the troop is now, but it was someone from them who came in, and that had kind of come out of identifying a need for some variety for the girls for something for them to do as well.
Yeah, because I mean, really, we talk about sport, but you know, the bigger picture is physical activity.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
yes.
And the bigger picture for Scotland is, yes, let's get physically active.
Yes.
And I think if young girls feel confident that they're physically active, they will then consider sport.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. But so from school, you went to university. You went to University of Glasgow. And as we spoke earlier on about Catherine Granger, whether
yes.
she be a dame or not, we spoke earlier on about, you know, that's what ignited Catherine's passion for rowing. Was there anything within the environment in university that would have encouraged you back into sport? When did you give up when you left high school?
Yes, so I essentially stopped the last show, as it were, for the dancing and cheerleading was towards the end of the school year. And after that, I essentially just didn't do anything else again. And when I went to university, what really sparked me was becoming an activist, and I was very active in university in charity groups and protests, campaigning, that kind of thing. But there was nothing, and while obviously at Glasgow University there's quite a large, the sports scene has its own union, I just wasn't attracted to it at all. And whether that's just because of, you know, the person that I was at that time, and I didn't necessarily see myself within the culture that I saw the sports union presenting. So I just had essentially no interest and didn't even try to get involved with sports at university.
It's quite fascinating looking back, you know, because you can understand yourself a bit better, and you
yes.
hope you can take this understanding and give it to other young women.
Yes.
But it's not just as easy as that, isn't it? Because sometimes
no.
it's something you've got to experience yourself and get through yourself.
Exactly. And it's, you know, there's a hugely social aspect of sport. And we saw ourselves, you know, at university, you know, the different sports groups would have all these huge nights out and they would do all selective fundraisers. But it was quite difficult because at that point, you know, I'd done dancing at school, but I was also at school a huge activist and, you know, did a lot of that campaigning at high school. So that essentially won out that battle. When I went to university, I picked that side of me, as it were. So, and just that's it. I mean, I kind of just didn't do sport at all, and I didn't at that point have a specific sport that I liked. So it wasn't, you know, that I'd go and go, oh, I'm better, you know, like Catherine Granger, you know, she got reeled in with a glass of wine. Well, maybe if the Glasgow University Rowing Club had offered me some wine and French this week, I would be sitting here and I would be Dame Eleanor Soper, but it's not to be, unfortunately.
So there's still plenty of time.
Still time. Plenty My time. Olympic dreams are still alive.
To be a Dame, there's still plenty of time. But, you know, the strange thing is, whilst you're at university, you know, you're not involved in the sporting side of it, but you get introduced to the Warriors. And I do. I mean, this, to this day, is still one of your passions.
It absolutely is. So
give me the background on that.
So in my second or third year of university, I already was really good friends with a girl called Christy, who at that point was volunteering and working for Glasgow Warriors, and I'd been to see Scottish rugby play at Murrayfield a few times, having grown up in Edinburgh. And she said to me, you know, come and check out a Warriors game, you know, it's a really good atmosphere. So this was back when Warriors were still playing at Fir Hill. And so she took me along to the game, and because she was working, she just sat me down and she went, right, these are some good people, they will be your friends. And they did. And I remember my first game very clearly. It was on Halloween. I was dressed as a witch. I was with two other witches. I was with someone in a tiger onesie. And it was Richie Gray's last game. So, of course, I was a witch wearing a Richie Gray mask, which I then took on to my Halloween night out after the rugby. And I met Ruri Jackson, who was very lovely and probably had no idea why this crazy person who knew not very much about rugby, wearing a Richie Gray mask and a witch's hat, was coming over to speak to him, given that I had no idea who he was, just that he was on the pitch wearing the shirt. And essentially from that, started going to games more regularly and became a season ticket holder the next season, which was the first season at Scotstoun. And during that summer in between, during that season, the last season at Fir Hill ending and the first season at Scotstoun Hill starting, one of the people who I had been thrust down next to, a wonderful woman called Mary Williams, cornered me and said, we think we're going to start a supporters club. Glasgow Warriors doesn't have a supporters club. We think they should. Do you fancy being the treasurer? And I went, sure, having had no experience of being a treasurer, but had found some great kinship, some amazing friendship between the people that I'd sat down with at this game. And, you know, I then went to the Rugby Sevens with them when that was still in Glasgow. And it just ignited this kind of passion. I was like, yeah, actually, I do have loads of experience of being on committees. I really like these people. And at the beginning, it really was just like five of us, a group of friends who set out to set up the 16th Warrior, as it was. We held a competition for the name, and people put entries in and it was voted on. And we got official status a couple of years later.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Because, you know, obviously there's five of you and you're setting it up.
Yes.
But how does it progress from there? Is it official? You know?
Yes. Uh-huh. So we had a number of meetings with the Warriors. So I believe there were five of us at the beginning. And then three people essentially dropped out, and so there were only two of us, and it was myself and Mary, and kind of leading the way, trying to get official status. And we were very close to Glasgow Warriors. We worked very closely with them, and we had meetings with them all the time, and they were very supportive of us setting this up.
Yeah, I mean, that must have been fascinating, because you're basically working with what I would think would now be your heroes.
I mean, not necessarily the players, but the staff behind the scenes, some of whom are still there. Uh-huh. And essentially, I remember, I believe it was our first AGM, or potentially our second AGM, where it was at that point just me and Mary, and we were, you know, I was at university, Mary was working full time, and Mary at that point was also working for one of the sponsors of Glasgow Warriors, and we were, you know, really quite flat out. And at the AGM, we essentially went, please help us, please help us, and received four amazing committee members who are now the four people who run the 16th Warrior. And Mary and I continued on as, so Mary continued as the chair and I continued as the treasurer for an additional year.
So how long ago was all this?
So I It's now 6 years old.
6 years old?
Yes.
And what changes have you seen in terms of the Warriors and their status in the past 6 years?
I mean, it's been quite amazing. So when I first went, we were just kind of like not even half filling the Jackie Husband stand at Firhill Stadium. And now, I mean, just what, a month ago, if you look at Celtic Park, with the final, which unfortunately we didn't win. Let's not talk about it. It's a bit touchy.
But also on the same day as the Scottish Cup final. And to be holding it at Celtic Park. So what were the numbers there that day?
So I believe there were about 60,000 people there.
Wow.
So it was huge. And it's obviously the biggest turnout I've ever seen. And obviously not everyone was there for Glasgow Warriors. But the noise, even though we didn't win, the noise is something that I will never forget. Just that incredible sound when they came out. It was just amazing.
Quite amazing over the past 6 years how the PR, the marketing of the Warriors has really increased, mm-hmm. and people are much more aware of it. You know, I have my son and my grandson are very keen to go along and experience this. One of my board members in Scottish Women's Sports supports them. She sponsors them. And there's just this feeling that it's a great night out for the family.
It is. And I think Warriors, one of the things that really attracted me to Warriors, and originally I was a football fan when I was younger. I was a huge Celtic fan and kind of, again, lost interest in that as I lost interest in participating in sport. And there was something about Warriors, the amount of work that they do with the community. Back then, they were so close to their fans because, you know, they were still quite a small club. You know, they'd never, apart from the 1872 Cup, you know, they hadn't won anything. They didn't have any silverware. They were really engaging with, like, grassroots rugby, really engaging with their fans and building this kind of core following, which they still have now, even though they're still huge. And they always try, they still do the kind of the camps for the kids. They still do, you know, like they put on fan zones for the fans. And even though they've got that kind of huge, they're pretty big now, they're pretty well known across Europe, and you know, we won the Pro 12 as it was then a couple of years ago, and there's just something about the Glasgow Warriors that really spoke to me. And now I have my own Warriors community. You know, I still have, while I'm not in the 16th Warrior Committee anymore, I took a step back about 2 years ago after I left Glasgow and moved back to Edinburgh. You know, that support system, that network is very much still there, still go along, help them whenever I can, and have a whole friendship group, have a whole kind of life that's based on Warriors.
Wow.
And probably the best thing to come of it is I actually met my partner at Glasgow Warriors because his season ticket was two seats along from mine and we've now been together 4.5 years.
Wow.
So it's such a huge part of my life.
Lovely
and
story.
We got together, uh-huh. you know, we were friends for 2 years and then uh-huh. we got together after a Glasgow Warriors game uh-huh. and just simply by where you bought your seat.
I think there's a whole dating app. You know, we were speaking
I think
about
there might be.
I think it's a whole dating app. But tell me, see, to go back to the fan club,
mm-hmm.
any idea what the numbers are like?
So I believe there's about 1,000 members now.
Well, I mean, that could be a full-time job for someone.
It could, and I believe the Robert, who is the current chair, I believe it feels like a full-time job for him sometimes.
I'm quite sure. But you don't just restrict yourself to following rugby.
No.
You're a great fan of Serena Williams.
Love Serena Williams.
Now, apart from her tennis, which I think no one can deny, I take it there's other reasons, in fact, that you're, you know, an activist, etc., that you follow. Tell me what you think about Serena. What good is she doing for young women in sport?
I think Serena is just an amazing role model, not just kind of for sportswomen, but for women of colour as well. And I think everything that she does is so inspiring, and against, you know, huge kind of difficulties against, you know, trying to break through a lot of, you know, she's got this whole racial and sexist elements working against her. And I mean, she is a phenomenal tennis player, but she's also very vocal when she stands up for what she believes in. And one of the things that we look at in the report, which I know we'll discuss later, is the importance of having these role models in sport. And she, you know, is out there. She's broken down the barriers. She's winning all of the trophies and is just being, like, really amazing while she's doing it. And, you know, is very honest and truthful about her journey and about, you know, things that have happened to her, especially since becoming a mother. And I think that that's, for any young woman wanting to do something in sport, having that kind of role model is really important.
Yes, I think you're right. I think that it's fascinating that she can be so open and honest, yes, about what's happening in life. And then, you know, people can think, well, if it's happening to Serena Williams, then I must be okay.
Absolutely.
You know, if it's happening to me. And it's always that question that's in your head, is this right? Is this normal?
Yes.
We're hearing for somebody like Serena. But, you know, tennis, they're amazing because they have great role models.
Yes.
And we've got a great male ally in Andy Murray.
I love Andy Murray.
I don't think your boyfriend or your Warriors would be lovely to you.
He loves Andy Murray, yeah, more than I do.
To be honest, who doesn't love Andy Murray?
I know.
You know, and it was so fascinating to see him coming back. And do you know what I liked about the whole thing was just at the very end, his face. His face.
I know.
Actually said the picture. I don't think it was about whether it was a cup or whatever, it was the fact that he managed to get mm-hmm. through this and he came out on top.
I actually cried when I saw the photo. I just it was really emotional watching him in those press conferences. I mean, not even that long ago, a few months ago, saying, you know, I actually don't think I can ever play tennis
again.
Well, he
was so emotional himself at that
exactly
point, wasn't
he? And that was just, I mean, heart-wrenching to watch. I mean, he is one of the, if not the, great Scottish sports person, but he's also an incredible feminist ally and has done so much work, even just like essentially his unconscious thinking, you know, all of these things like, oh, you're the first person to do this. He's like, you mean the first man? You know, just these little intricacies, always standing up for the women in the sport as well, which I'm sure, you know, has helped having such an amazing mother.
Well, yes, of course. It's such a natural response from Israel.
It is.
It's not in any way does he have to think about it. It comes out natural. And yes, I think Judy and Jamie,
yes,
as a team, as a family,
I know,
they really
what an amazing family,
don't they?
Yeah. And it's actually, there's an interesting link in that Pete Horn and George Horn, who are Glasgow Warriors players, their auntie used to be Andy Murray's mum's tennis partner.
Wow.
For doubles.
Well, do you know, that's the thing about Scotland,
yeah,
isn't it? Somebody
yeah.
always knows somebody that's done something.
I know. You know. So I believe that they thought that one or both of them might go down the tennis route, but they both ended up playing for the Glasgow Warriors.
Wow. But listen, again, I was quite glad to hear that you've also got room for football.
I do. A new room.
A new room for football. And, you know, there's always room for new fans at all the sports.
Exactly.
And, you know, but you attended the home game before the players went off.
I did, yes.
So how did that compare with attending, say, the Warriors game? Because that was a great game to be at 18,500.
Oh, I mean, and so obviously the kind of usual attendance at Warriors game is 7,500. So, you know, we're doubling that figure. And it was just amazing because you don't see that women's sport in Scotland. And I think it was over double what the last attendance record-breaking was for Scotland's women. And it was...
Actually, it was more than double.
It wasn't?
It was just under 5,000 before that.
Okay,
you know,
so...
Because we kept on promoting the fact that, you know, the 5,000 were there, take a friend, we'll get 10.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, it was actually... You know, double that
yeah.
again.
And what was really great, so we got tickets through the Parliament. We got tickets through Linda Fabiani. So I was able to take with me women who are taking part, did the report that we'll be discussing shortly. Stay tuned. And we were in a part which was obviously full of people who had received complimentary tickets to attend the game, and it was full of kids who were so excited about the game, and that just gave me such hope for the future that all of these kids, and they didn't care that it was women on the pitch, these were young boys, young girls, and they were so excited about the game, and every time Scotland scored they were so excited, and you couldn't not kind of feed on that, you know, enthusiasm for the game, and it was so inspiring, and it was just such a great game.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think that, you know, there quite a few people that say, well, you know, you had to give away so many tickets. To me, that was an investment.
No, absolutely. And I absolutely think, you know, and anyway, I had, before I got the tickets, I had bought tickets to the game anyway, because the tickets were £5. And I strongly believe that that's absolutely how you build support for a team. You give away tickets to communities, to schools. You have the ticket prices low. You bring them in. This is what Warriors did. When I start, this Warrior season ticket prices now are still nothing in comparison to football season ticket prices, but they're vastly more expensive than they were when I first started going. I think my first season ticket was less than £100, you know, But that's growth, and people are still coming back and they're still paying the additional money because, you know, you got that investment at the beginning and now they know that they're going to sell out season tickets every season.
And I think also women's football and the Warriors, there are similarities in terms of, you know, the players themselves still go out and they thank the fans.
Yes,
you
absolutely.
Know, before they went to the World Cup, they were visiting all the soccer centres, which they're named, the soccer centres are named after a lot of the players. There's a Kim Littlesay one up in Aberdeen, Rachel Corsi's up there. Aberdeen. I think it's fascinating. Also, what I thought was fascinating, I don't know if you know this, but, you know, they were playing Jamaica that day.
Okay, yeah.
And Jamaica have had a struggle to get their team together. In fact, they had no money, and it wasn't until Sidella, and I'm trying to think I'm saying her name right, Bob Marley's daughter, heard about this, thought it was so unfair, spoke to a few friends. They got some fundraising and helped support the women's team.
I mean, that's amazing. It's sad that that's what had to happen in order to get the team there, but it's amazing that that's just a community coming together and saying, no, we want this women's team, and if you're not going to give them the money, then we will.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, what she was saying, that even with sufficient money and exposure in place, a key phase of the journey became challenging gender norms.
Yes.
Jamaica's men teams, the Reggae Boys, that's their name, have full funding and a more popular fan base. The Jamaican Federation actually cut the funds from the women's team for a second time in 2016. And that's, again, when Bob Marley's daughter came back in, reignited her fundraising efforts. And, you know, to be fair, on the night, they gave Scotland a good game.
Absolutely. I wasn't sure that we were going to win at one point. But it was exciting. You know, it's a friendly game. It doesn't necessarily mean anything. And actually, having that many goals makes it quite exciting.
Oh, yes. I think it was a great game.
I think it was.
To kick off, you know, their departure going to France. What do you think will be the word they all use, the legacy of this World Cup, what do you think is going to be left behind to build on?
So hopefully what it's done is provided, you know, I spoke earlier about role models, it's provided this kind of whole new group of role models that they're able to kind of look up, listen to, hopefully some increased funding as well, maybe for women's sports, and maybe just like whole new batches of, you know, women that want to get involved in football. So I think for the legacy in Scotland, that's something that can hopefully be built on. I think, unfortunately, a legacy that's going to live on in people's minds is the use of VAR.
Ah, well, you know, that's an interesting one because, again, with your background in rugby, and I was recently at Scotland-Ireland game in Murrayfield, and I find it absolutely fascinating and part of the game, the way they do it.
So,
I found it frustrating in football.
So, yeah, and I was thinking about this a lot because, you know, I was hearing, when I wasn't really watching football, hearing people complain about VAR, and I was going, what are you talking about? Every other sport uses touchline technology, uses video footage in some capacity. You know, tennis, you've got that. Rugby, we use it all the time. And actually, it's quite exciting in rugby, especially if they're checking if a try has been scored and everyone's like, oh, what's it going to be? And everyone's watching the screen and going, is it a try? Is it a try? And you can hear when the fans are like, it's a try! Or
but also, Mariah, you can buy headphones at rugby and you can listen to the conversation.
You can listen into it and because you get a ref mic, so you can hear what the ref is asking and you can tell from what the ref is asking what they're going to be looking at as well. So you always, even if you don't have one, there's someone a couple of rows in front of you who's saying, oh, he's checking it, try or no try, or he's checking, is there any reason why I can't award this try? And it's exciting and it's good and it means that we get things right. And it, you know, it also in rugby, one of the things that it is good at is ensuring players' welfare. So it will go back and look at tackling and things like that because, you know, there is a huge increase in kind of focus on looking after rugby players' health, especially in terms of head injuries. So it has a really crucial role to play kind of in that. But I mean, the Argentina game.
You look at me saying, what's the difference then? Well, you know, why is it not working? Why is it not flowing? Are the officials needing trained up? I mean, I think I had a conversation at the weekend and someone had said that, started this conversation, I don't know where it's going, that really they the problem was, particularly with the Argentina game, that they didn't stop the clock.
Yes.
You know, so when it came to the end of what the referee thought was a fair amount, we could all calculate it up and say, well, we don't
not
think
even
it's
remotely
a fair amount. Yeah.
Yes, I was shrieking at the television.
I think it's quite good because I think there's a lot of households I can sit and thinking, my goodness, if somebody could see me now. But
yes.
So how could they improve it? What are they doing wrong that they could be doing better?
So I believe there's just not been a kind of a set implementation period, a set training period, because if you're bringing in this technology, and you know, maybe I think it is a good technology to have in sport, you need to make sure that there's consistency across all levels. There's consistency across, you know, men's sport and women's sport, and there needs to be, you know, that kind of increased understanding of what it is, that kind of increased knowledge of the game and, you know, other kind of things that have happened. And yes, you are going to get mistakes. There's mistakes in rugby too. Not that I'm thinking back to Scotland's departure from the Rugby World Cup in 2015. Like, every day I dream about it.
There's a tear in your eye. There's a tear.
But there are mistakes made, and there's always going to be mistakes made.
Yes.
However, you know, it's a really important thing to have, and I just think there needs to be a level of consistency, because it's not just been in that Scotland game. There's been things that have happened in VAR across this World Cup, which is leading people to say, well, we don't want it. And
well,
actually,
look at the USA Cameroon game.
Exactly.
So the legacy in your mind is FIFA, take some time to train up,
to make sure
before you put it in a world stage that it's going to work, and don't have us wasting, what, 7, 8, 9 minutes looking at a television screen.
And then not stopping. So in rugby, the great thing that they do is when they do that is they stop the clock. They don't estimate what time they've spent. They stop it and then they know.
And let's be honest, that's not a difficult thing to do.
No, it's not. And that's what should have happened in the Scotland game. So, lesson to FIFA, train people on VAR.
I'm sure.
Get consistency. I know. Get some consistency and make it work, because it's worth it. It is worth it.
So, let's get on to, well, the main reason that you've come in to speak to us tonight.
Yes, not to talk about Glasgow Warriors.
Do you know, I've loved it. It's been fascinating and I've really, really loved it. But I am really interested in this report, and it's called Young Women Lead. And in fact, you're the programme coordinator for Young Women Lead within the Young Women's Movement. So we have got maybe about 10 minutes to chat about this.
Okay.
In fact, when I look at the clock, we might not even got 10 minutes.
Right, I'll speak very fast.
Well, let me ask you a few questions. How did this come about? Whose idea was it? Where did it originate?
Okay, so Young Women Lead is a programme that's run by the Young Women's Movement. This programme, this is its second year now. It began after the Status of Young Women in Scotland report, which came out, where young women who were part of this survey identified that they wanted more places for their voices to be heard. So we created Young Women Lead. And last year I was a participant of Young Women Lead, and we did a report on sexual harassment in Scottish schools. And this year I'm now the programmes coordinator, and the topic that was chosen by the participants themselves was women participation in sport.
So when you say the participants themselves, who are the participants?
So we have 28 women, young women under 30, who applied to be part of the programme, and then we picked them from those that applied.
Ah, so tell me how you went about it. What was your kind of research methods?
So essentially, we acted as facilitators for the committee. So the committee did the research themselves and then came back and did reports on the sections themselves. So they did an online questionnaire, one which was for school pupils or, you know, adults in Scotland, one which was for teachers. They also did focus groups with people working in sport, and a focus group with a group of girl guides as well. And they interviewed coaches and service providers.
Now I'm sitting here looking at the report, and, you know, basically you're getting this all verbatim. You know your stuff. There's no doubt about that.
We launched the report last week and there was a long list of stuff to do before then.
Tons to talk about. I mean, you know, you've gone into many different areas. You've talked about schools, you've talked about social media, you've talked about image, puberty, etc., etc. Let's just start off with the positives in school. What are the positives?
So the positives in school is that people tended to enjoy PE, really, when, you know, they had the kind of choice of to look at it. when they were able to kind of, when there were good facilities, you know, these things kind of helped them. So some people do enjoy PE, which is good.
Yeah. I mean, I think, again, reading your report, it says, I hated being in a class with boys. They'd make fun of the girls and stare at our breasts and bums. It was even worse than swimming. They would also never pass the ball to us when we did sports and they excluded us. I thought maybe that had died out, you know, like, you know, I thought that was something in my era.
Unfortunately, that's not even remotely died out. No. So we received a lot of horror stories from people at schools today and from our focus group, which was with young girls between 10 and 14. That was really a theme that kind of ran through all of the findings there.
And one of the other things was even in terms of wearing a sort of the white shirts.
Yeah, absolutely. And just this kind of one of the recommendations when we looked at this is that having consultation on girls to what they want to wear to PE, giving them the choice of what they want to wear. A kind of a main theme that came out from the report was girls feeling uncomfortable when their bodies begin to change, and that's when we see this kind of drop off in sports. And having to wear an uncomfortable PE kit that maybe highlights parts of your body that you are not yet comfortable with, you know, is an issue. So just even giving them the power to pick what they want to wear to PE would make a huge change.
I mean, the bottom line is, if no matter whether it is comfortable on, if you don't feel comfortable wearing it.
Exactly.
Excuse me. So the recommendation on this is
for the Scottish Government to kind of work with young women to hear specifically what their needs are, to hear about what kind of things that they're looking for, essentially to create an online space for young women to look at what they're looking for in PE, look about what facilities they want, what kind of sports they enjoy, where there's rooms for improvement, and look specifically, you know, just listen to them, listen to what they want, and to co-design things with them.
I mean, given that that's perhaps the first time that young girls get a taste of, you know, sport, I think it's important that we get it right.
Absolutely.
So, in terms of rolling out the recommendations, what do you hope would happen?
So what we are looking to do, so this report was launched in the Scottish Parliament last week, and what we hope to do is to engage with ministers and committees within the Scottish Parliament to enact real change. So that's kind of what we'll be doing with this going forward. And we also, the girls who participated in making this report are also available kind of to be witnesses at committee sessions to talk about their findings.
It's quite fascinating because I actually tuned in when you were having the open meeting and you, if you people that were sitting around the table, Julie Gordon being a case in point. And it was a great debate. I actually really enjoyed watching that debate. Some of them can be quite dry.
No, we try not to be dry.
Social media and body image. Now, you know, if you had this report maybe 10 years ago, you wouldn't have even had to include that. But it is a huge point with a huge impact on individuals. What was your recommendation there? What did you find and what did you recommend should happen?
So I think specifically we were looking at, we found that a lot of people who kind of interact with body positive pages or Fitspiration pages, you know, actually it could have quite a negative impact on how you view yourself. So there were a few things that we looked at, for example, regulating influencers doing things like skinny teas, detox teas, trying to have some kind of regulation for that, because, you know, a lot of these bodies are quite unattainable and are heavily or are simply heavily edited, and you're not going to get it by having a detox tea. So looking at getting regulation in on that, of which there's some campaigns on it already, and just kind of adding our voices to those.
I mean, it is fascinating. Can people get a copy of this report? And, you know, if someone wanted to read it, how would they get their hands on it?
So you can read the report on the Parliament website. If you just search for Young Women Lead on the Parliament website, you can read all about this year's programme and last year's, and read a full copy of the report there.
I'm delighted to see that the fun factor is included.
Love a fun fact. And it came up a lot. You know, people want sports, can be fun. And if you make it fun, then people will continue it.
Well, funnily enough, when I worked in football, you know, we were doing some pop-ups and we were looking for some sort of strap lines to have. Mm-hmm. And the one that we used was Football Friendship Fun.
Yeah.
And it just seemed to fit all the aspects.
Absolutely.
Can you believe we're running out of time?
I know, I can't.
Can you believe you're running out of time? So you can get a copy of this report on the website.
Yes.
And I wanted to say thank you to Elena for coming through and for speaking to us. Next week I'll be chatting to Rona McLeod at XBBC and we'll hear all her stories and learn what she's up to just now. But before we go, Elena, you have a song to play us out with.
I do, and it's back to my love of Glasgow Warriors. It's Warriors by Imagine Dragons.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
See you all next week. Goodbye.
As a child, you would wait and watch from far away. But you always knew that you'd be the one to work while they all play. And you'd lay awake at night and scheme.
Love music. Live sport. Let's hear it for the girls with Maureen McGonigal and special guests on Rock Sport Radio.